is real time to stop talking and to start doing. There are no middle way. Either we are with Gaza, with Palestinians, with people in Palestine, or we are against them.
At the panel discussions, participants from different nationalities and faiths focused on practical measures and strategies to mount pressure on Israel to stop its attacks on Gaza and allow the delivery of international humanitarian aid to the territory.
Most people around the world are empathizing with our brothers and sisters in Palestine. They want to do something. Actually, people of no faith whatsoever and some of different ideologies, different faith, they all want to do something. They cannot stand to see this ongoing bloodshed.
We have to talk about this. We have to communicate and express solidarity with Palestinians.
We should send boats to Gaza. We should send boats with humanitarian aid.
All the participants reiterated that it is beyond imagination that more than 20,000 Palestinians have so far been killed in the Israeli attacks on Gaza since October the 7th. They all called for a ceasefire.
The fact that the panelists come from different backgrounds and different nationalities and different faiths shows that the issue of Palestine transcends all boundaries, and today it has become a humanitarian issue. Gisum Shahmadi, Tehran.
In the limelight.
Failing to achieve their goals in Gaza, the Zionist regime forces are punishing Palestinian civilians through systematic humiliation and subjecting them to degrading and sadistic treatment. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East Eye wrote, since the onset of the Zionist regime's colonization of Palestine in 1948, innumerable visual records, photographs, and televised footage have documented wide-scale, disproportionate violence marked by humiliation and inhumane conduct by the Zionist regime military against unarmed Palestinian civilians. Notably, in many cases, the victims were defenseless children, women, and the elderly, and those with disabilities. On October 8, the Zionist regime's government launched a major military assault on Gaza, declaring its objectives as liberating the Israeli captives and dismantling the resistance movement Hamas, although several leaders, from Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to War Minister Yoav Gallant, made clear their genocidal intent. 2 months later, with more than 20,000 Palestinians killed, it appears that the Zionist regime's government is failing to achieve its goals. The shocking level of carnage and destruction has triggered massive protests worldwide and international condemnations of the Zionist regime's genocidal war. The staggering death toll, particularly of children, attacks on the occupied West Bank, and wanton violations of international law, including the targeting of hospitals and placing a siege on food, water, and fuel, have raised questions about the intended outcome of the Zionist regime's war against Palestinians. This is coupled with internal pressure by the families of hostages and the broader Israeli regime public on the government to actively pursue their release. In light of mounting domestic and international pressure, the Zionist regime's government has been working to craft a narrative to justify the extreme violence it continues to inflict on more than 2.3 million residents in the Gaza Strip in the name of fighting the threat of Hamas. Historically, there have been numerous instances of militaries punishing civilian populations and subjecting them to sadistic and degrading treatment after failing to attain their political or military objectives. In response to global calls to halt its deliberate targeting of civilian infrastructure, the Zionist regime's government continues to desperately establish the purported military presence of Palestinian armed factions within major hospitals across the Strip. This effort materialized in an intense aerial and artillery shelling campaign on hospitals, including Gaza's main medical complex of Ashifa. The attacks, targeting patients and displaced individuals within hospitals, extended to the detention, mistreatment, and exploitation of doctors as human shields. In a disturbing turn of events, the Zionist regime troops blocked medical staff from retrieving the bodies of victims from hospital courtyards, leaving them exposed to animals for an extended period. In other incidents, eyewitnesses testified to the Euromed Human Rights Monitor that the Zionist regime troops assaulted and humiliated Palestinian civilians using the designated safe corridor to evacuate Gaza City and the northern Gaza Strip, according to this group. One eyewitness account stated that an Israeli regime troop ordered a Palestinian man to strip while awaiting checkpoint approval. When another Palestinian questioned the troop's actions, he was fatally shot in the head with onlookers, including his family, barred from providing assistance or recovering his body. In a distressing series of events, accounts emerged of the Zionist regime troops subjecting displaced women to degrading treatment and humiliation in the designated safe corridor. Reportedly, two displaced women were ordered at gunpoint to undress in front of hundreds of onlookers before being permitted to redress and continue their journey southward. Additionally, in the northern Gaza Strip, a woman who was 5 months pregnant recounted an incident where an Israeli regime officer ordered her to take her clothes off and threatened her with rape if she did not comply. More recently, circulating video footage purportedly recorded by the Zionist regime military depicts numerous Palestinian men abducted and humiliated in the northern Gaza Strip. The men were predominantly displaced individuals seeking refuge in residential buildings and UNRWA-run schools amid the Zionist regime's bombardment. They were shown shirtless and stripped down to their underwear, with their hands raised behind their heads. The Zionist regime forces had lined them up on the street and taken photos and videos of them. The videos were shared widely by Zionist media outlets and troops, who have disseminated dozens of videos and pictures on their social media accounts, particularly since the ground invasion. In videos posted on TikTok and Instagram, they openly mock Palestinians as they celebrate the invasion of their neighborhoods and beaches. In other scenes of victory, they planted Israeli regime flags on vital facilities and headquarters, residential buildings and courthouses and universities. Contrary to the initial Israeli regime narrative locating the mass detention campaign in the Shajaya neighborhood in the east of Gaza City and in Khan Yunis in southern Gaza Strip, subsequent revelations disclosed that the incident took place in Jabalia in the northern Gaza Strip. The Zionist regime's forces said those abducted were members of Palestinian armed factions. However, testimonies of eyewitnesses and members of the abductees' families collected by Euromed Human Rights Monitor's team on the ground and other organizations and journalists confirmed that they were unarmed civilians, including teachers at the UNRWA-run schools, who are typically security checked multiple times before and during their work period with the United Nations, journalists, and university students. The initial disinformation later corrected is not only a result of the Zionist regime's attempt to demonize Gaza residents, but is also indicative of a persistent endeavor to present an image of victory to its citizens and, most importantly, to its Western allies. It aims to provide supposed proof that its bloody military campaign, which has killed tens of thousands of Palestinians and displaced hundreds of thousands more, was in fact meant to subjugate all Palestinians into subordination and not simply eradicate the resistance movement Hamas. Violence within settler colonialism is a peculiar breed. This brand of violence goes beyond mere dominance or cultural erasure. It aspires to region over and obliterate not just communities, but the very essence of individual psyches. At its core, it seeks to humiliate. The Zionist regime employs a systematic strategy of humiliation to psychologically impact and break down Palestinian individuals and communities. The objective is to instill feelings of shame and degradation and potentially induce enduring psychological effects that erode Palestinian steadfastness and resistance. Despite being a consistently applied policy for the past seven decades, it has not succeeded in deterring the Palestinian population. An essential question for the Zionist regime is to reflect on the implications of internalizing and normalizing practices that involve humiliating fellow humans and taking pride in such actions. This systematic violation of human dignity and justice demands a critical examination of its impact on Israeli Zionist societal norms and values. The fabricated regime of Israel and its Western backers like to compare its genocide in Gaza to the Allied campaign in Dresden. But this is a false narrative. Unlike the Allies, who did not attempt to humiliate the people of Dresden, the Zionist regime's violence, particularly in its destructive power and evident desire to humiliate, is akin to the atrocities and humiliation witnessed during other parts of the world.
The wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
Zionist Israeli entity intensified its aggression on Gaza while keeping one eye on Hezbollah in Lebanon and the other on the West Bank, primarily due to its strategic proximity. Neither the entity nor the United States of America foresaw that Yemen, which has been at war for years without a practical resolution, would turn into a new front. In November, the Yemeni armed forces declared war on the Zionist entity in support of the resistance in Gaza, presenting a significant and unwelcome surprise for the entity. Yemen initiated missile and drone attacks on targets in the Zionist Israeli port of Eilat, overlooking the Red Sea. However, the Yemeni armed forces did not stop there and announced the imposition of what could be described as a naval blockade on the entity. It appears that there are significant losses due to the Yemeni missiles, prompting the Pentagon in the first week of December to announce a plan to form a naval force to so-called protect international navigation in the Bab el-Mandeb Strait and the Red Sea. However, despite the availability of European countries' warships and frigates, they do not express great enthusiasm to join this force. Well, that is mainly due to the fact that European countries do not possess a large naval fleet. Warships are distributed between protecting the coasts of these countries and positioning near Ukraine in anticipation of any developments in the Russian-Ukrainian war. On the other hand, these countries are concerned that if they participate in confronting the Yemeni armed forces in their Gaza support operations, their commercial ships passing through the Bab al-Mandeb and the Red Sea could themselves become targets for the Yemenis. In the meantime, despite the Pentagon's threat to respond to the Yemenis, the Yemeni armed forces daily reaffirm their determination to continue targeting Israeli entity ships and ships bound towards occupying Palestine until the Zionist entity ends the genocide against Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. The matter is no longer limited to imposing a blockade on Zionist Israeli ports. The geostrategic battle and its escalating events are shaking the world. The closure of the Red Sea to ships colluding with the enemy turns into a heroic festival, teaching the U.S. and Zionist Israel harsh lessons and threatening them with more successive blows capable of breaking their alliances and coercive global policies. These strikes establish a new stage of resistance given the expansion of its military operations and the development of its capabilities to combat malicious international hegemony. There is a clear evolution in the history of resistance post-October 7 and after the introduction of the equation of the Red Sea and the Bab al-Mandeb Strait. Welcome to the Middle East Stream. I'm Marwa Osman.
Christians and Christianity are under attack in Gaza and Palestine more generally. Zionist ideology is not just anti-Muslim, it is anti-Christian too. What is the common factor that links Muslims and Christians in Palestine? They're Palestinian. So it's no surprise that the Zionists are making sure to destroy churches as well as mosques. On October the 19th, Israel bombed the Church of St. Porphyrius, Gaza's oldest, killing at least 18 people. The church is said to be the third oldest Christian church in the world, with the current building having been constructed by the Crusaders in the 1150s or 1160s. A church was built on the site as early as 425 AD. 2 days earlier, an explosion at Al-Ahli Arab Hospital, an Anglican institution located a few blocks away, killed and injured hundreds, according to Palestinian health authorities. The evidence is beginning to mount that the attacks on specifically Christian targets are themselves a specific genocide contained within the larger genocide aimed at Muslims and indeed all Palestinians. On December 16th, the Zionists directly targeted a Christian convent. An Israeli army sniper assassinated two Christian women, Nahed and her daughter Samar, inside the parish of the Holy Family in Gaza on Saturday, said the Latin Patriarchate's media office. One of the women fell while trying to rescue the other. Seven others were injured while attempting to help. Gunfire was directed at them inside the walls of the monastery, and there was no resistance in the area, it added. An Israeli artillery vehicle also targeted the Monastery of the Sisters of Mother Teresa in Gaza City, which shelters more than 54 disabled individuals within the church walls. The Zionist attack also destroyed the fuel tank, the power generator, and the solar panels, in addition to extensive damage that rendered the place unsuitable for habitation or providing care for people with disabilities. On January the 26th this year, a mob of Israeli settlers attacked an Armenian bar in the Christian quarter of the old city of Jerusalem, shouting, "Death to Arabs, death to Christians." At the beginning of October, a video emerged of ultra-Orthodox settlers in Al-Quds spitting on Christian pilgrims. Armed and violent settlers are also in the process of attempting to liquidate the Armenian quarter in Al-Quds, and with it, the wider Christian presence, which has been there continuously since the 4th century. Only 800 to 1,000 Christians are believed to still live in Gaza, constituting the oldest Christian community in the world, dating back to the 1st century.
This year, Christmas celebrations are cancelled in Bethlehem, and for obvious reasons. It's impossible to celebrate while our people in Gaza are going through a genocide.
It's no wonder the church in Palestine has cancelled Christmas. Yeah.
Hunger has become the most pressing of the myriad problems facing hundreds of thousands of displaced Gaza Palestinians, with aid trucks able to bring in only a small fraction of what is needed, and distribution uneven due to the chaos of the war. The Euro-Mediterranean Human Rights Monitor, a Geneva-based rights group, has found that 71% of people in the Gaza Strip suffer from extreme hunger due to Israel's devastating war on the Palestinian territory and the regime's method of using starvation as a weapon. The group released the figure after it conducted an analytical study of a sample of 1,200 people in Gaza. According to the study's findings, 98% of respondents said that they eat insufficient amounts of food, while 64% of the participants admitted to eating grass, immature food, and expired materials to satiate their hunger.
All 2.2 million people are hungry, meaning that they are in crisis or worse food security situation.
More than 130,000 of Gaza's most vulnerable children, that is newborns up to 2 years of age, are not receiving the critical life-saving breastfeeding or age-appropriate complementary feeding that they absolutely require. So that's our scenario. Without sufficient safe water, food and sanitation that only a humanitarian ceasefire would bring, child deaths due to disease could well surpass those already killed in bombardments.
The study found that the rate of access to water in the Gaza Strip, including drinking, bathing and cleaning water, is 1.5 liters per person per day. This is 15 liters less than the minimum amount of water required for survival at the level required by international standards. Additionally, the study examined the effects of malnutrition and a lack of access to clean drinking water. 66% of the study sample reported having experienced diarrhea, skin rashes, or intestinal diseases in the past month. Even in Rafah, which has a crossing to Egypt through which aid trucks enter, the dearth of food and clean water is so severe it is causing people to get ill.
The contaminated water is another issue, as the water is not 100% clean, so children and adults suffer from intestinal problems such as vomiting and diarrhea. So I ran out of antidiarrheal medications, Flagyl medicines, which is an intestinal disinfectant, and Silabrin, which is antibiotics for intestinal infections. There's a significant loss of these drugs.
Since the start of its genocide in Gaza, Israel has imposed a comprehensive blockade on the Strip and prevented supplies of food, water, fuel, and other humanitarian necessities from reaching the more than 2.3 million residents of the Strip. Israel's use of starvation as a weapon has intensified since October 7 and has included cutting off all food supplies to Gazans, as well as bombing and destroying the Strip's bakeries, factories, food stores.
We were compelled to come here as there are no bakeries available. The people here who are our friends are baking bread to aid the community. Procuring flour is challenging for us, as a 20-kilogram bag costs around 300 to 400 shekels, which is a substantial amount.
About 577,000, meaning more than 500,000 people, are already in catastrophic levels of hunger, meaning they're essentially starving. That is like one in every four people.
Speeches and statements from Israeli officials promoting a campaign to deliberately block access to necessary resources for the Gaza population as a strategy indicate that Israel has not made these intentions a secret. The Israeli blockade, on top of the genocidal aggression, has plunged Gaza into humanitarian catastrophe, where lack of access to sanitation and safe water has increased the prevalence of waterborne diseases. The Rome Statute of the International Criminal Court says that intentionally starving civilians by, quote, depriving them of objects indispensable to their survival, including willfully impeding relief supplies, is a war crime.
The people in the hospitals, yes, they need everything. They need medical supplies, but what they ask for first is food and water, the very basics. They do not have them. One of my colleagues described people lying on the floor in severe pain, in agony, but they weren't asking for pain relief. They were asking for water.
The plight of Gaza's 2.3 million people has become desperate amid the war. Around 80% of Palestinians living in the Gaza Strip have been displaced by the violence, while efforts to get aid into the territory have struggled. Alarmed humanitarian organizations have been calling for a ceasefire and denouncing the shocking cost of the catastrophic war, which amounts to a collective punishment of the civilian population of Gaza.
We are homeless. We can't go back to our houses. I want to see my children. I want to go back to my husband and to my house. It's unfair. It's so unfair.
This is a firm response to Israel's genocide and aggression against Palestinians. It has been about 2.5 months since Israel launched its deadly onslaught on the Gaza Strip and the occupied West Bank. Muslim countries missed no chance to deplore the Israeli crimes verbally, but there were few, including Yemen, that firmly stood in solidarity with defenseless Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. After carrying out drone and missile strikes on Israeli targets, Yemen's armed forces have now been targeting Israel-bound vessels in waters around their country. The army has time and again stated it would stop its operations if Israel stops its aggression and ends its blockade on Gaza. The Yemeni armed forces have also refuted claims about targeting ships moving toward other destinations. All vessels except Israel-bound ones can safely sail through the Red Sea and the Suez Canal. As usual, Israel's main backer, the U.S., has been trying to reverse the impact of the Yemeni operations by announcing the formation of a maritime coalition under the pretext that it would protect the transit in the Red Sea. But Washington's main goal is to protect Israel's interest. However, Yemen's Ansarullah has issued strong warning to the U.S. Mohammed al-Bukhaiti, a senior Ansarullah official, says the newly formed coalition will get a painful response if it violates the sovereignty of the Arab country. But how significant the Yemeni operations in the Red Sea are? In recent weeks, Yemeni naval forces have targeted several vessels sailing through the Red Sea toward Israel. Their primary goal has been to exert economic pressure on Tel Aviv, and they have been rather successful. Several major companies have suspended their shipments to and from Israel in the wake of Yemen's operations in the Red Sea. This has dealt a heavy blow to Israel's economy, with the latest reports indicating that the port of Eilat is hardly hit as the result of this disruption.
The non-arrival of ships to Eilat means that there is no income for the port, while the fixed expenses for its maintenance and operation remain the same, and we have a substantial negative flow.
The almost complete halt to the arrival of ships to Eilat has led to an 80% fall in the port's profits. This is while reports say that Egypt's Suez Canal has seen no harm to its maritime activities during Yemen's operations against Israel-bound ships. The Red Sea is a strategic trade route connecting Asia to Europe through the Suez Canal. About 12% of global trade passes through the Red Sea, including 30% of global container traffic. The disruptions in this area have had a direct impact on global economy. Now, cargo ships traveling from Asia to Europe have to sail around the African continent. This has increased the transit time and led to higher freight rates and delays. Also, shipping insurance costs have jumped by tens of thousands of dollars a day, and oil prices have gone up as well. To sum up, the international community has been unable to stop the Israeli crimes against Palestinians through political means. However, it seems Yemenis have employed a successful tactic to pressurize Israel.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us.
واقعیت زندگی
and try to apply them to our daily lives.
چجوری ممکنه؟
How is it possible?
للتي اقوم ويبسط
از راه قرآن.
By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من، این قدم آخر نیست.
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step, brothers, not the last one.
هو الذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين.
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth, that he may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheists should be averse.
والذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله ولو كره المشركون.
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش، با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد، موسیقی خاصی دارد، روش خاصی دارد، اینها چیزایی لازم نیست.
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones.
اما این کافی نیست.
But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن، دوری از قرآن، از قرآن.
Muslims major problem is losing touch with the Quran. 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 کتاب
الله. اقرا بسم ربك الذي خلق.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. يا أيها المزمل قم الليل إلا قليلا نصفه
أو انقص منه قليلا أو زد عليه ورتل القرآن ترتيلا.
ودعوتك ربي بقرآن جنبني حراني.
Let's recite the Quran.
ناجيتك أرجو غفرانا يا من ينجينا إحسان. ودعوتك ربي بقرآن.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجهم. السلام عليكم. Respected brothers and sisters, dear listeners of IRB English Radio, welcome to Let's Recite the Quran Kareem, a series of Quranic sessions held by IRAB English Radio in cooperation with Sevier International Schools Network. So I'm really happy that again I have brothers Ali Nasir, Hussein Ruhullah, Hassan Nasrullah and Fawad Haider with us here in this session. Salaam alaikum and welcome everyone. Salaam Hussein, how are you?
Wa alaikum salam sir, how are you?
Alhamdulillah, thank you. Ali Nasir?
Alhamdulillah sir.
Alhamdulillah. Great. Good. Hassan?
Alhamdulillah, sir.
And Fawad, how is it going?
Everything's fine, sir.
Alhamdulillah. So, brothers and sisters, we are ready and we are fine. We are energetic. Inshallah, hope you are the same. Let's get started. Inshallah, today we will talk about Ayah 117. Inna Rabbaka huwa a'lamu man yudillu an sabilihi wa huwa a'lamu bil muhtadin. And Ayah 118. فَكُلُوا مِمَّا ذُكِرَ اسْمُ اللَّهِ عَلَيْهِ إِن كُنْتُمْ بِآيَاتِهِ مُؤْمِنِينَ. The two verses of Surah Al-An'am, 117 and 118, on page 142, bottom of the page. So, let's listen to the recitation once.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. إن ربك هو أعلم من يضل عن سبيله وهو أعلم بالمهتدين. فكلوا مما ذكر اسم الله عليه إن كنتم بآياته مؤمنين.
Nice recitation, mashallah. We'll move on to the explanation once. have a short explanation, make sure you refer to the Tafasir books in case you want to learn the detailed explanation. I will have a short one here. Just an introduction to the ayah, then we'll mention the tajweed rules and we'll practice the recitation. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Let's see what Allah Almighty says in these two ayatain of Surah Al-An'am. Inna, ayah 117. Inna rabbaka huwa a'lamu man yadillu an sabilih wa huwa a'lamu bil muhtadin. Inna means indeed, certainly. It is used for, it is one of the words of certainty. Okay? Inna, for sure. Indeed, or for sure, your Lord knows best those who stray from his way. Those who stray from his way. Go other way. Wa huwa, Allah Almighty, is a'lamu, and he knows, he is most knowledgeable, or he knows best. Wa huwa a'lamu bil muhtadin, and he knows best those who are guided. Muhtadi or muhtada, muhtada, okay, with mahdi. Mahdi means the one who has been, who was guided from the beginning, okay, by Allah Almighty. Like we say, Imam al-Mahdi alayhi salam, he is guided, okay. I mean, he was on the right path from the beginning, okay. But muhtadin are those who will be guided. They were not guided, but Allah Almighty helped them. And also they, by their free will, they choose the right path, okay? And Allah Almighty also bless them, so they will be guided, okay?
Yes.
So Imam, when we say Imam al-Mahdi, okay? He, it means he was, from the first he was on the right path, path of Allah Almighty, okay?
Yes.
Next one, Fakulu. This ayah talks about eatings. Fakulu, eat. What? Eat. What should we eat?
Halal.
Food. Eat food. Okay. What kind of... it talks about meats. Okay? Meat. Animals. So, what animals can we eat? Who can say? Any type of meat, any type of animals that you see in the world,
no.
You can eat?
No.
Halal meat.
Halal meat. So, this nice one, nice answer. But what does this halal one mean?
Permissible.
I mean, permissible, I know, man. I mean, what is, what do we mean by halal? Something is halal, this meat is halal, and this meat is haram. What do we mean by this?
The factors that Islam gives us, according
how
to...
The criteria, the conditions that Allah Almighty has, the Islam has given us. Like, if the meat or the animal...
Yeah.
First of all, the animal must be from halal animals,
yeah.
Edible animals. Okay, you cannot hunt a bear, okay? You cannot hunt, what, for example, a lion, okay? And you say, oh, I fulfill the conditions now. Okay, I say, Allahu Akbar, I slaughter it in Islamic way, I eat it. No, it is a haram animal to eat, okay? We have animals with haram meat, we have animals with
halal
meat. So... these animals from halal, who have halal meat, some of them I name for you. Who can name?
Chicken.
Okay.
Cow.
Goat.
Goat.
Sheep. Fish.
Fish is like fish from the fishes. Animal seas they are.
Uh-huh.
All types of fishes, no, you cannot.
Yeah, some.
Okay, look, from domestic animals. From domestic animals like what? Cows. Camels, huh? Goats, sheep,
chicken.
Chicken from the birds, yeah. Chicken, like
ostrich.
You can, yeah. Ostriches, like you can eat. Most of the birds are eatable. Okay, you will, inshallah, study in the book At'ama wal Ashraba in the Islamic law. We study this. Okay, At'ama means the eatable things, the foods. Ashraba means things that you can drink,
mm-hmm.
Drinkable things.
Yeah.
Okay. So, in Islamic law, there is a book, At'ama wal Ashraba. You can refer to the Islamic laws, okay? The books of the scholars, you can find out. But, so these animals, like buffalo is also edible, okay?
Yeah.
Because it's a type of cow. Like antelope, deer, these are edible, okay? You can
yeah.
eat
ox.
Okay? These animals that I mentioned, they are edible.
like horse and donkey, they are edible, but they are makruh.
Yeah.
They are halal, but they are makruh, okay? But the other animals, like lion, like tiger, like elephant, like, oh, these animals are haram. So, guys, Allah Almighty says, فَكُلُوا مِمَّا ذُكِرَ اسْمُ اللَّهِ عَلَيْهِ. Eat from those animals, okay? The halal meat, those ones with halal meat, not all of them, over which Allah Almighty's name has been mentioned. Mentioned there are conditions you should face the to the qibla, okay, face the animal towards qibla. You should use, for example, iron. You should
give them water.
Yeah. These no, these are mustahab things, but the wajib conditions. Things, yeah. Okay, so these are the messages from this ayah. Inshallah, refer to the tafasir books, also to the Islamic laws, the books. Okay, jurisprudence, you can learn more. All right.
Yes.
قرآني نبض حياتي قرآني طهر ذاتي قرآني عصمة أمري قرآني طوق نجاتي قرآني نبض حياتي.
How to learn Quran easy. What is the correct way to read the Quran? What is the correct way to learn Arabic and understand the Quran? Be with Let's Recite the Quran.
Now, let's mention some of the tajweed rules and, inshallah, practice the recitation. Recite a salawat, everyone.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad wa ajil farajahum.
Inna rabbaka. The word inna has a noon mushaddad. Whenever you have noon mushaddad or mim mushaddad, you should pronounce it with
a nasal sound.
Also, stretch the sound
or extend the sound.
Two counts. Inna rabbaka. Not inna rabbaka. Stretch the sound. Ra has a heavy sound, okay? Because it has a fatha. Huwa a'lamu. Make sure you pronounce hamza and ayn correctly. A'lamu. Not a'lamu. Or not a'lamu. And also not a'lamu. 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 Okay?
Yes.
من يضل عن سبيله. How do you read that?
من
يضل. أحسن. إدغام. من يضل عن سبيله. عن
إخفاء.
Hide the sound of noon. عن سبيله. If you continue reading. سبيله وهو. But حسن, can we make a pause here? Because we have a stopping sign. صلة. What does that say, حسن?
It says that it's better to continue, but you can make a pause.
Mm, good job. Sila says, wasl is better than waqf. Yes?
Yes.
وَهُوَ أَعْلَمُ بِالْمُهْتَدِينَ. There's no special rule, only an extension at the end. If you want, you can extend it, okay? To beautify the recitation. Next ayah, فَكُلُوا مِمَّا. Aha. In the previous ayah, we had nun mushaddad. Here we have mim mushaddad, yes? Is that exactly mim mushaddad?
Mimma?
Ah.
Yeah.
No.
No.
It is min ma. They are merged. Mimma.
Yeah.
Okay. It means from those. Min means from those animals. Okay. In mimma dhukirasmullah. You ignore the hamzat al-wasl. Dhukirasmullah. Pronounce the word Allah with a heavy sound. Allah. عَلَيْهِ إِن كُنْتُمْ إِن كُنْ. Both noon, both of the noons will be pronounced with a hidden sound. إِن كُنْتُمْ. تُمْ ends with mim. Next, we have ba. Mim approaches ba. Mim sakin approaches ba. إِخْفَى, mashallah. You hide the sound. إِن كُنْتُمْ. We have the ikhfa of noon, we have ikhfa of mim. Both the letters will be what? Pronounced with a hidden sound.
Yes.
You hide the sound. Bi ayatihi mu'minin. That's all. Very simple and easy. Now that you have learned explanation and also the recitation, the tajweed rules, let's recite them beautifully, inshallah. Okay? Brothers and sisters, please, together with Hassan, Hussein, Ali Nasir, and Fawad, listen and repeat. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
إن ربك هو أعلم من يضل عن سبيله
إن ربك هو أعلم من يضل عن سبيله
وهو أعلم بالمهتدين
وهو أعلم بالمهتدين
فكلوا مما ذكر اسم الله عليه إن كنتم بآياته مؤمنين
فكلوا مما ذكر اسم الله عليه إن كنتم بآياته مؤمنين
إن كنتم بآياته مؤمنين إخفاء with meme, okay? Don't forget. Read it.
إن كنتم بآياته مؤمنين
أحسنت صدق الله العلي العظيم
صدق الله العلي العظيم
أحسنتم Thank you so much brothers and sisters, dear listeners of Arab English Radio. Thank you so much for being with us till the end of this session. Stay with us. In the coming sessions, inshallah, we'll be here with you again. Hassan Hussein Ali Nasir Fawad, thank you so much. Thanks to Arab English Radio, Sevilla International School. See you, inshallah. That's all from us for today. Wassalamu alaikum. Walhamdulillahi rabbil alameen. Wa sallallahu ala muhammadin wa alihi attahirin.
Allahumma salli ala muhammad wa ali muhammad wa ajil farajahum
Let's recite the Quran, a joint production of IRIB English Radio and Xavier International Schools.
ذكر وموعظة ونور فيه شفاء للصدور وشفيعنا يوم النشور آياته تروي المدى وصفاته نبع الهدى نلقى الجنان بحبه لن تستقيم حياتنا إلا به هو القرآن والفرقان إليه تنصت الأكوان وفيه تعطر الآذان
The war industry. Part 3.
After September 11th attacks, Blackwater changed its operation from providing training centers to work as a military contractor. By the support it received from officials, it signed big contracts amounting to billions of dollars.
Blackwater USA has been called the largest private army in the world.
My guest tonight is the controversial founder and former CEO of Blackwater, Eric Prince.
Prince's firm made over $1 billion out of the so-called War on Terror. It also highlighted the clear danger of using private contractors on the battlefield. And yet now, he's back on the scene, trying to privatize the war in Afghanistan by offering to replace US and NATO troops there with his own private security force.
Blackwater founders had established their company with the support of the State Department and the CIA. Following the 9/11 attacks and the occupation of Afghanistan and the invasion of Iraq, their main responsibility was to provide U.S. diplomats and officials with security in those countries.
Without Blackwater to protect them, U.S. officials can't leave headquarters in the Green Zone.
We need protection for our diplomats.
On February 16th, 2005, an Iraqi vehicle came under heavy fire by Blackwater forces when they were escorting a U.S. military cavalcade. Later on, they claimed that the Iraqi vehicle targeted them, but an investigation revealed that one of the Blackwater agents had opened fire. On February 6, 2006, a sniper employed by Blackwater opened fire from the roof of the Iraqi Justice Ministry, killing three guards working for the Iraqi media network.
When you look at how private security companies were operating in Iraq, it wasn't that surprising that something like Nusra Square was going to happen.
The last controversial move by Blackwater in Iraq was the deadly shooting incident in Al-Nusra Square in Baghdad, which claimed the lives of several Iraqi civilians, including children.
17 Iraqis lie dead. Many more are wounded. Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki tells Washington he wants Blackwater out of his country, a demand that soon reveals just how dependent the U.S. is on private contractors.
The Blackwater forces were acquitted in the first two incidents, and the U.S. officials even rejected punishing the security firm's forces involved in the killing of Iraqi guards, arguing such a move would lead to disappointment of Blackwater forces. But the last incident took them to court.
That Blackwater personnel have shot and killed innocent civilians, don't you?
I disagree with that.
What happens in Nusra Square points up the chief source of controversy over the use of contractors. Who do they report to? Where do they fit in the chain of command? Or are they outside it altogether?
In August 2007, Jean Richter, who was sent on a mission to Iraq to check Blackwater's activities, in an article warned that the security firm had been overlooked and they consider themselves above the law.
The Army had a much more highly defined hierarchy, a more regimented command structure, and then you had these private companies who could do whatever they want. And they did.
In fact, this was one of the original reasons for using private contractors. The administration didn't have to ask Congress for permission.
The probe on Blackwater was halted, but after all those developments, Blackwater was forced to change its name to Exe Services to erase its activities in Iraq and Afghanistan from memories. After years, their history had new dimensions.
You mentioned there that the U.S. government asked you to do a job and you did it. You mentioned that you lost men on your watch. What you didn't mention is that you also killed a lot of people. You say, well, you know, percentages is great. Let's talk about individual cases. In 2005, Blackwater guards fired 70 rounds into an Iraqi civilian's car, forcing the State Department to investigate. In 2006, according to leaked Pentagon documents, Blackwater guards fired indiscriminately at Iraqi civilians, killing, among others, an ambulance driver. In 2007, Blackwater guards shot and killed 14 Iraqi civilians in what's been called the Nusra Square Massacre, or Baghdad's Bloody Sunday. That is the record that a lot of people around the world remember when they hear the name Blackwater.
Sure, and when you do 100,000 missions, it's easy to take some things out of context. But remember, you had many thousands of insurgents actively trying to kill Americans, and not just American servicemen, but the most newsworthy Americans there, diplomats, and when the State Department asked you
to drive... But the people I'm mentioning weren't insurgents. You killed, at Nisour Square, your men killed a mother and son on their way to an appointment, a doctor and a son. They killed a nine-year-old boy shot in the head.
Sadly, the insurgents don't wear uniforms. They would drive ambulances filled with explosives. They would drive...
So your men thought they were shooting at insurgents?
A car bomb doesn't give you much time to decide.
There was no car bomb at Nisour Square in 2007.
Blackwater was now more than a private army. The most important thing that gave the company power, and no one could question it, was its services to the US government. Whenever the US Army decides to make a move without having blood on its hands, it asks Blackwater to do its dirty work. Supporting Blackwater, or XC Services, or as it is today called Academy, wasn't limited to the Obama or Bush administrations. Two of Trump's aides, including his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, made efforts to outsource the long war in Afghanistan to private security firms like Blackwater. The goal was clear: reducing the costs and warding off the risks posed against the American soldiers. Supporting the private military firms in order to not taint their hands with blood was the lucky but short-lived star of the Ephraim and his friend David. Signing a contract with two inexperienced young men by the Pentagon was very strange. David said during the meeting with the Pentagon officials, they were so confident that the officials didn't even ask about the background of two young men in their 20s. But the fact is, if the Pentagon wanted to check their background, it could easily do that, especially since they weren't in a good status on the list of suspicious people prepared by the State Department. They had a record of smuggling in illegal weapons. The Pentagon even overlooked their failure in the previous projects. The overlook was in fact a tool for the Pentagon to push forward its goals. So, by outsourcing the project to a small firm, they could put a cover on the crisis in the future. The Chinese bullets David and Ephraim gave the Pentagon in Russian packaging were discovered after a while. They were tried and were given a 7-month house arrest for bypassing federal laws. They weren't so lucky to stay in the military business for years, just like Eric Prince and Blackwater did in Afghanistan and other places. Or maybe their problem was they couldn't find the right conduits in the Pentagon. So their ambition blew up in their faces and retired in a position of massacring people while they were still in their 20s. They could probably earn huge amounts of money in this industry for the rest of their lives.
IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.